I've got to ask you about a couple things. One, of course, you touched on before the hour, and that was you went back to the Garden of Eden-type area of Egypt at the time with lush greenery, and the pyramids were almost complete. Did you ever witness in that dream state, Gordon Michael, how they moved those blocks?
Yeah, I was able to watch the construction. There were several different techniques that were used. The stones themselves, the quarrying was done with a form of a laser process, and it was done with the help with another culture, a non-Egyptian culture that came in and gave assistance.
Extraterrestrial?
No, this was Atlantean.
Ah.
And so it was a combination of groups that were from Russia, or the current Russia, the Caucasus Mountains, the Egyptians, and the Atlanteans. So this was a kind of a planetary effort. And so they had these, we would call them today lighter than aircraft, I guess is what we would call them. We would call them like dirigibles or blimps. And so these things were able to carry the stones from the quarries to the site, and then they would be staged there in the site. So they were when they cut them from the quarry, they were pretty much finished, and so they would bring them to the site. And then they had other technology to get them moving up the ramps. And the biggest thing that they used was they tried to make it a cultural unity of power, showing the strength of the human spirit, because the whole structure was built for that purpose. It was a place of learning, initiation, and time travel. And so by various sounds that the groups that were working there created, were able to power up, if you will, a form of a static charge. And
sounds with their own voice?
And their own voice, yeah, okay. And their voice themselves would couple, and it would power it to a priest who we would call an architect, if you will, and they would have a staff like an ankh that would look. It's and that particular staff would be directed. It would be so the sound charged the staff. The staff allowed the stone to rise off the ground and negate gravity. And then they were able to move it along a form of a carpet. We would call it today, it would be like aluminum foil almost. It was thin.
Yeah.
And they would move these things and bring these things up into specific places. Mm-hmm. So the big thing about bringing it from 20,000 slaves and coming up the river and bringing them up the ramps wasn't what I saw.
What happened to lost technology? Where is it?
Well, it's like anything else. You know, you try to find something that's even 500 years old, it's hard to find.
Sure.
And you talk about something that's 10,000 years old, that, you know, the greatest archaeological find currently on this planet has been here and visible for years. And that's Great Pyramid. And unless you go in the Great Pyramid and see the engineering behind it, you know, you wonder how could anybody question this. Now, what was in there, you know, part of it was a form of an observatory. And so, you know, you can see the tracks where the equipment would run up in these tracks. You can see all the machinery and the technology was, but it's been stripped out, including the capstone. So, you know, people came and they stripped it. And of course, even more recent times, they stripped the outer casings to build Cairo, you know, after the earthquake. So year after year, you know, century after century, millennium after millennium, the thing is, it's amazing that the thing is still there. But what is there is just—it's just amazing, and you have to look at this and say, you know, nobody could build this today, and who built it and why? I mean, those questions have got to come to you when you go to this place, and you know, when I you go there and I happen to be there with some Egyptologists, and I said, how can you question what you're seeing here? And they would just run the standard line, you know, it's this age and this is the, and then they just repeat it. So there isn't a free thinking in Egypt at all. It just doesn't exist when it comes to that. It's outsiders who write books and do the research.
Yeah, that's true. What about Atlantis, Gordon Michael? Did you ever see that in your dream state?
probably my, I would say 90, that may be strong, Ed, maybe 80% of my voyages have dealt with Atlantis, scanning back a quarter of a million years.
80%? Wonder why.
I would say 80%. And the reason is that my life currently is tied so closely to one of my Atlantean lives. I'm aware of at least a half a dozen of them, you know, who I was and what I did and what lessons I learned or didn't learn. But one in particular, you know, it's very strong. And it's what I call a simultaneous reality. I'm able to exist in that time frame and here at the same time, where it's almost like I share a consciousness when I'm there, and I can observe what's going on. I can observe the teachings. I can observe the political structure and the clothing and what people are feeling and how so much different the society is. And then I can kind of look at today and say, what did we developed today that's from there, and I can see elements of it, you know. And it's a light show that whenever it happens, you know, I just feel so blessed. It's like, it's incredible. And the more I visit there, the more what I learned in that life comes through in this life.
Where was it?
The lessons that I learned.
Where was it?
Where was
it? Atlantis.
Atlantis occupied a space all the way down to, you know, just east or portions of east of Cuba, for example.
Where they might have found some structures now.
Yeah, I've been following that carefully, and they may have discovered some colonies of Atlantis. Atlantis was kind of a long stretch of lands that stretched between Africa and the United States. And so if we were to take a line... maybe from let's say New York,
mm-hmm.
and go over to all the way over to Africa and draw that line, you'd see that's kind of the northern portion of it, and then it kind of straddled in between those two, all the way down to through the Canary Islands would be the eastern portion of it, the Bahamas, and the lowlands of it were places like Maine, New Hampshire.
It was huge.
Yeah. It was a large thing. It was a very long thing, and that was in its original day. And then it went through other earth changes throughout the millennium, and it became broken up into several pieces, and then broken up again into several pieces. And then finally, the plate that supported all of that landmass shifted. It actually dropped and rotated 7 degrees. And so if you can imagine, it's like a little sub-tectonic plate there. It kind of rotated, and everything that supported that above thing just sank.